Cool. So I'm Carissa. I didn't get permanently raptured earlier. I know there was some concern, but I came back. yes. I live in Whangarei with the Bethel crew up there. Clearly, I'm not native Kiwi. You probably all figured that out. You're very discerning. The gift of discernment is strong here. I'm from America, and I went to the Bethel School in Reading, and that's how I got connected and made friends with the people who are leading the church up in Whangarei. So that's kind of the relationship, the very brief relationship story behind that. but I'm just going to tell you a little bit about myself, so it's not just a random person who sang at you and then starts preaching things. So I have been really passionate about nations, and I started traveling when I was 14, went on my first missions trip to Guatemala, and then have just been going to countries all over the planet, advancing the kingdom of heaven and seeing God show up and the miraculous. And when I was 16, I went on a trip with Randy Clark and Bill Johnson to Brazil, and that's the first time that I saw miracles when I prayed for people. And it is a milestone in my life that will ever mark the rest of my days. I saw someone when I was 16. I was praying for someone with an interpreter, and she had a steel pin in her neck from an accident that she'd had. And so we started praying for her, and they had taught us during that week, they were teaching us, this is how you pray for the sick and ask them questions. How is it? What can't you do? So I just asked her what was wrong and started praying, and I forgot all the other steps. So I prayed for like 10 seconds, and then I thought, oh no, I messed it up already. So I stopped praying, and I asked the translator, can you ask her, is it mobility or is there pain there? And she asked her, and then she turned to me and said, oh yeah, the steel pin, it disappeared from her neck. And I was like, wait, the pin disappeared or the pain disappeared? I'm just making sure that I heard the right accent, like you said the same. She said, yeah, the pin is gone from her neck. It's just, you can't feel it anymore, and she can move her neck. And I was like, I didn't even know what I was doing. I thought I messed it up. And so since then, the miraculous has been like super important to me and precious to me. And that's kind of how I ended up going to school ministry at Bethel, because I just wanted to be somewhere where that was a normal thing, and everyone was going after it as normal humans, just a part of life. And I just was in Myanmar a month or two ago, and I was actually feeling a little bit tired, and there was a student, a ministry school student there from their ministry school in the church, and he brought someone over to me and said, can you pray for him? He has deafness in his ear. And I really wanted to empower him, because he was new to seeing the miraculous, and I also was feeling lazy. So I was like, you pray in Burmese, and I will just be here and support you. So I just had my hand on his shoulder and hand on the guy who was receiving prayer. And he prayed, and then I said, just pray in Burmese. You'll do good. You're fine. So he prayed, and then the guy said, yeah, it's a little bit better. And I said, okay, pray one more time. Just pray in Burmese. I don't need to pray in English. So he prayed, and then he checked it again. And the guy said, yep, it's totally good. I can hear 100%. It's amazing. And so I was like, see, dude, I told you that God wanted to heal through you also. This is normal. Like, you can hear him and partner with him just the same way that I can. And then a couple minutes later, someone else brought a girl to me and said, this girl, she has deafness in her ears. And I thought, this sounds familiar. So I grabbed the same student. He was standing near me, and I said, come here. This girl, she has deafness in her ear, and you just saw someone get healed from deafness. So you pray for her and release the same thing. You just saw this miracle. So he prayed for her, and the first time she was like, yep, it's all good. I can hear 100%. Everything's fine, which is so cool. And then I was asking him, like, is this the first time that you've seen miracles happen or whatever? And He said that the first time was a few days before when we had been at their ministry school. But he said, yeah, this is like the first time I've prayed for people and I've seen them get healed, which made me so excited because that is definitely my heart, to be really empowering and supporting and just building people up to know who they are in Christ and that they have the same thing, and that it isn't about just the people who breeze through for a week and do all the miraculous and then leave, that they actually carry the same Holy Spirit and can do the same thing. So that's kind of some of the stuff that I've been up to recently. Also, on the trip to Myanmar, I went and visited some friends and went up to the Himalayas, and I got to dirt bike. I'd learned to dirt bike. That was the first time, and I was like dirt biking through herds of yaks, and I felt really cool. For like one day, I thought I was the coolest white girl on the planet. So, I love all that kind of stuff. And I think I'm funny, but you don't have to laugh if you don't want to. So I probably laugh at myself while I'm preaching. So sorry about that, if that's annoying. But I actually really had it in my heart, and I know you guys are talking about family. I mean, Kingdom family is a big deal all year round, but I know you're kind of focusing on that for December, and we're all about Kingdom family at our church too, which is why we like to hang out with you. We all just are on the same page. But I really wanted to talk about moving towards one another in love. And that is one of my favorite parts of who Jesus is and how he interacts with us, is he constantly moves towards us in love, in the face of pain, in the face of fear, in the face of us hurting his heart. Even when we were sinners, he has always moved towards us in love, and it wasn't determined on our end as to our behavior, his reaction to how he was going to respond to us. So I just wanted to read some verses in 1 John 4. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there, or your phone. I actually was going to read quite a few verses, since reading the Bible in church is always a good idea. And I couldn't pick just one that I felt like was better than the other ones. And so now you all have to listen to all of them. So verse 7 through 21. And I will try to read slow because I get excited and I read real fast. So here we go. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. This is how we know that we live in him and he in us. He has given us of his Spirit, and we have seen and testify that the Father has sent his Son to be the Savior of the world. If anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God, and so we know and rely on the love that God has for us. God is love, and whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. And there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. We love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command: anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. That's so good. I could just read 1 John and then sit down. Yeah. Kind of preaches itself. Yeah, I love the challenge that he sets before us. He describes Jesus and how he came and he moved towards us and he loved us, even in a place of our brokenness and our pain and us causing his heart pain by our destructive choices. And he says we are called and we're marked by love the same way that Jesus was, and we're called to live like him and to love like him in the way that he interacted with people. And that the way that he did that is by moving towards us in love, in the face of conflict, in the face of disagreement. He always moves towards us in love. So I was thinking about, like, how did Jesus do this in the gospel? And I found a ton of stories that I thought were really cool illustrations of how he does this. At the woman at the well, he comes to her and he starts sharing with her how thoroughly he knows her. But he takes the time to speak to her in a place where it was not socially acceptable for him to approach her or to interact with her in any way. Besides the fact that she was a woman, she was a Samaritan woman from somewhere else, and they just didn't hang out, those people. So he goes and he moves towards her, and she's got a pretty messed up life. And he doesn't ignore that. He doesn't just brush past that and ignore the fact that that's happening and that he doesn't feel like that's a great idea for her. He does acknowledge, like, you are so right. The person that you are with is not your husband. You've had six of them. And he just goes through. And so he does call her out on, like, this behavior is destructive, but he is talking to her and giving her his, putting value in her and giving her his full attention and loving her so well. And after that conversation, even though he's saying to her these things that are happening are not super great for your relationship with other people and for yourself and for your relationship with me, but she goes to the town and she's not feeling condemned. She's not feeling walls going up between her and him saying, he said all these things that I'm not doing right. Or she goes to the town and she says, come on, come out here and meet the man who told me everything I ever did. So their conversation must have been longer than, like, the one verse that he is recorded. But she goes out and she wants to bring other people into this intimate relationship because he made it a safe place in how he interacted with her and moved towards her in her place of pain and in her place of brokenness and in her place of distance, even though even the people, the Jews, said that she was disqualified because of her gender and because of who she was and her people group. He's still move towards her in love. And then Zacchaeus is a little scoundrel. He, like, steals from people. He's deceptive. No one likes him. And he climbs a tree, probably partly because he's short. They say that he's short, but also probably because no one else really wanted to stand near him. So he's just up there hiding in a tree, spying on Jesus. And Jesus moves towards him and says, hey, I am coming to your house. I'm inviting myself over. I feel enough camaraderie with you that I'm going to just say, hey, I'm coming to your house. We're going to eat lunch. And he moves towards him in love and pursues relationship with him. And Zacchaeus' response to him coming into his house and to pursuing him in love is to cut off all the bad behavior and to restore more than what he had taken from people. And he just made a complete turnaround. And because of that moving toward, he wanted to restore the relationships that he'd broken. He wanted to restore his relationship with Jesus. Like, wow, this behavior is destructive. And so he moved towards Jesus and he moved towards people around him and did his best to mend the broken relationships, which was really cool. Jesus' love was so powerful that it, like, compelled this man who was clearly, like, not in the best heart space. If he was, like, stealing from people and no one liked him, like, if no one likes you for a long enough time, you're pretty grumpy, got walls up, you're not going to be approachable. And Jesus broke all that down through coming towards him in love. Peter, after he denied Jesus, Jesus takes a walk with him on the beach, and Peter's pretty messed up, and Peter clearly hurt Jesus' heart. Jesus knew it was going to happen beforehand, but that's a big bummer. Like, one of your three closest friends, and you're like, dude, you're totally going to betray me. You're going to walk away from me. You're going to leave me high and dry in my moment of, like, the deepest pain that I could have. You're going to walk out on me and kind of add insult to injury. And Jesus says, come on, Peter, let's take a walk. We're going to walk. And he's walking with Peter, and he just goes to him over and over and says, Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Like, affirming, I love you, and I'm going to keep pursuing connection with you. And I want you to be able to come out and come out of your shell and recognize, like, my love for you is bigger than the wound that I have because I hurt you, the fear that I have that I disappointed you. Like, I'm going to move towards you. And Paul does similar things in his letters as well. Paul lovingly confronts Peter and comes to him in love and says, your behavior is destructive. You're treating other people differently than the way that you would normally treat them if these people weren't around. You are treating the Gentiles like lesser than people. You're not loving well. And Peter, and he comes to him and he comes and confronts bad behavior, but he also is saying, like, come on, I know you're better than this, rise above it, and I'm moving towards you. He didn't just say, well, no one, let's all not hang out with Peter anymore, come follow me instead. He goes to Peter and says, there's a problem, and you need to know that you're affecting people this way, you're affecting me this way, and it's not great, and I'm going to hold up a mirror and show you, this is what's happening around you. If you can't see, you're clearly blind and deceived that what you feel like you're doing is okay. And I just want you to show you, you're hurting people's hearts and you're hurting relationships and you're breaking things that should not be broken. And he does it in his letters as well. He loves on them fiercely and says, like, I long for you with deep affection. And he greets people like super extravagantly in his letters, but he also goes, he's moving towards them and lavishing his love on them, and he also calls them on things that they are doing that's damaging their relationship with him and with Holy Spirit, that's grieving God's heart. He comes to them and says, I cannot believe that you would turn back to law when grace has been so graciously and lavishly given to you. And this is hurting God's heart, that he paid such a high price that you would have grace. And not only are you turning to the law, but you're making other people behind you turn to the law as well. And you're binding them up. And so he goes and he calls people out on all kinds of things that they do in his letters. That's just kind of one example. But these people, they went, Jesus and Paul and Peter moves towards Jesus as well when he's asking him, like, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? They are moving towards each other in love. And I feel like 1 John and all over the Bible, it's, we all know that God is love, and we will know, they'll know we're Christians by our love and our love for one another. We can't like hate our brothers and have distance between our brothers and say that we love God. And they'll know we are Christians by our love and by our unity in the Spirit. And even in 1 Corinthians 13, it says, if you don't have love, all the miraculous, all the signs and wonders, all of the healings, all of the stuff that God does, the working of his hands, it's just like this obnoxious noise, which is a pretty extreme statement, because I feel like even if I'm not loving you very much, but your foot gets healed, that should still be like a good thing. But in 1 Corinthians, it says, you're all the miraculous, all the faith, all the prophetic words. You could read someone's address and tell them their phone number. But if there's no love in your heart, if you're not loving and connecting with your brothers and sisters and pursuing heart connection with them, all of that is just obnoxious clanging cymbals and loud noises. It's just loud noise. And it doesn't actually have any of the deep meaning and significance, and like some of the power is taken away from it because of that disconnection between us and the people around us. One example of how I've been recently pursuing people in the face of pain and conflict, because God was bringing this up a few weeks ago with me. Someone that I was with, one of my really good friends in Fangre, some of his behavior one night towards me and one of our other friends, it was very like negative, and he was kind of demanding and bossy, and like the way that he was interacting with us was kind of disrespectful, and it hurt our relationship a little bit. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like the end of the world, but it definitely hurt. And I was like, okay, let's talk. Like, do you want to talk about what's going on? Like, are you okay? Because we kind of called him on it in the moment, said, hey, that wasn't that nice. Like, why are you treating us like this? And he didn't take our feedback very well. We could have given his feedback a little bit better, to be honest. But we just, in the moment, were like, okay, let's not do that. and so I asked him, like, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings when I gave you that feedback, but the feedback was still accurate. Like, that was damaging our hearts. And he talked about it for a little bit, and he was like, okay, yeah, I'm good. But I sent him a really encouraging, like, I just want you to know, like, a text afterwards, and said, I just want you to know, that's not how I normally receive you. You normally communicate really well. You're super honoring. You're really fun to be around. This isn't defining my relationship with you. I'm not saying, like, you're always doing this. I'm just saying this one moment, that behavior is going to damage our relationship if it keeps happening. And he responded really rudely to that text, and so that hurt my heart, because I was like, I tried to love you and you just like took my love and like threw it on the ground. So my reaction to my instinct was to just be like, okay, well, I'm just going to put a little distance between me and you because I don't feel safe that safe around you. You're causing some like fear in my heart that you're going to keep hurting me. And this behavior is painful to me and to my heart. And so my instinct was to kind of withdraw, like, I'll just put up a little bit of wall towards you. I don't really need to be your friend that much if you're going to be like that. And when I recognized that that was my like knee jerk instinct reaction, I decided, you know what, my value for my relationship with you and the amount of love and connection that we have is worth fighting for. It's actually worth moving towards you in that place of me feeling pain. It's worth me, like, the fear of confrontation and confronting you is smaller than the value that I have for, I'm going to fight for this relationship and I'm going to keep moving towards you, even in the place where I feel offended. And so even though it was like a very small thing, like, I'm not a super petty person, but I knew, like, I recognized that this specific thing had genuinely hurt my heart and that I have a legitimate need to be respected in a relationship and to be valued and to feel seen and known. So I went to him at his, he works at a different church in town, and I went to him at his office and said, hey, can we talk? I need to talk to you. And so we just sat down and I opened up my heart and I just said, hey, this is how I've been experiencing you this week. That these things that happen, I feel sad and hurt and a little bit afraid, and I feel a little unsafe that these things happened, and that your response to receiving feedback was scary to me. Like that you aggressively responded. That isn't cool with me, and I don't want to interact that way. That's not my standard of how I want to interact with people. I want it to be full of love and honor and courage, and that's why I decided to come to you, even in the face of when I'm feeling a little bit hurt and a little bit scared. And moving towards you when I feel like you might be a dangerous person right now is not the thing that you would normally go to. But I knew, like, my value for you, like, I want to be your, I want to have relationship with you more than I'm scared of having conflict with you, and I'm going to come to you. And so we had a really good chat, and he totally was able to hear and receive what I was communicating, and I showed him what was going on in my heart. I didn't come to him with accusations or in an aggressive way to say that he was the one causing all the problems or anything. I just said, hey, this is what's going on for me. I'm going to tell you about myself. This is what's happening on my end. And he said, that's not my heart. Like, I actually used to communicate. That's an old way that I used to communicate, and I've grown past that. Like, I don't want to be passively aggressive toward people anymore. I don't want, like, and normally he's not. So that's why I was like, this behavior is not usual, and I don't feel like you realize that you're doing this. So I went and I talked to him, and our relationship was stronger after the conflict than it was before. We worked through something and we built trust, and our relationship became stronger because I moved towards him in the face of pain and insecurity. And I think that's one of our biggest challenges or our biggest take-ups oftentimes in relationships is we don't feel brave enough or bold enough or capable enough, courageous enough to go to someone else and to show them our heart in the face of pain, in the face of how we're experiencing them. And also sometimes we feel like it's their job to come to us. And that is a very common thing for people to feel, that actually they were a jerk and they were clearly mean and out of line and they should come to me and apologize to me. And it doesn't work like that in the kingdom. Like, Jesus, his standard of how he pursues us, he doesn't, when we do something that is painful to our relationship, he doesn't sit there and say, well, I'm going to wait over here and put some distance between us until you decide I was a horrible person, and then you come over here and you say the right things, and then maybe we will work it out because I am better than you. There's no way that Jesus interacts with any of us like that. And so I think it's really important that we are full of the affirmation and the affection of heaven. It's not that person was deciding my worth or my value by their responses to me or anything like that. I knew that I was loved and accepted and approved. I'm not looking for the approval of man and trying to, like, make everyone happy. But the relationships that God has given me that I have kind of covenanted, that sounds very serious. But the people that I have said, I'm going to do life with you. We are family and I love you. And there's huge value in what you offer. And there's a huge value in what I offer to you. And I just enjoy being, those people are worth fighting for and they're worth moving towards when you're in family. And all those little fissures of things that you feel like may not be important, those things can easily start building up if you don't actually address them. And sometimes there's totally people who, like, I know they're having a bad day and they might say something like, I keep picking on Steven. Steven's not really done this to me, but if I know Steven's having a bad day and he says something that kind of snaps at me or something like that, I don't go to every person that has done something that's kind of like not loving and go to them and be like, right, we need to talk. Because I can be like, actually, I know that his, like, it didn't do damage to my heart, even though I was like, that wasn't like the best reaction. So I'm not like calling everyone up and being really petty and saying every little thing that you did wrong. It's the things that you're like, actually, I can recognize in my heart that has damaged my relationship with you, and being able to move towards people in that place. And powerful people, we were given the spirit of self-control, and God and Holy Spirit has empowered us to love and to love well. And powerful people can give vulnerable feedback in love. So that's coming to people and showing them, like I said, what's going on inside of you and holding up a mirror and saying, hey, this is how you're affecting your relationship. And actually, kingdom family is worth fighting for. And kingdom family is what the world is going to recognize us by. And kingdom family is what makes all the miracles and everything powerful and lends substance to it, is the fact that we have deep, loving relationships with each other. But coming to each other in love is a big deal. And so you come to someone else and it has to be actually you sharing, this is how I'm experiencing the relationship. Because people can come to you and say, I feel like you're being a jerk. That is not a legitimate feeling. That's like a little cloaked accusation, because the term I feel is actually a feeling and the way that you're experiencing something. And if you can replace the words I feel with the words I think, it's not an actual feeling. I think you're a jerk still makes grammatical sense. It's an opinion that you have of like, you are a snob, you're a jerk, and you're mean. Like, that's not going to open any sort of connection with the other person, because it immediately starts putting wounds in their heart, even if they didn't have any before. They could have already been a little bit wounded, but you saying those things causes someone to put up more walls and to put up more defense, and they don't want to move back towards you. Where real vulnerability, especially if the person already has love and value for you and it's a relationship you're fighting for in family and in relationship and community, if you open your heart and you say, hey, this is where I'm experiencing fear or pain or whatever in the relationship, the other person's reaction is almost always to move towards you. Like, if someone shows me their heart, like one of the leaders recently showed me, like, oh, I'm in a lot of pain. And it wasn't me causing it, but they opened their heart and they were sharing with a group of other leaders, like, vulnerably, hey, this is really hurting my heart. And everyone in that room, their reaction is to move towards them and to love them in that, like, to pour love and affirmation and strength and encouragement into that place of vulnerability. So it's really powerful to show people your heart, and it's not so powerful to come to them and to say, I feel like you're mean. So it's really important to come to them in a place of love, and you're just holding up a mirror and saying, this is what's going on inside of me. I'm opening my heart to you. And that's scary. That's why it takes boldness and courage, because you're coming towards them, closer to them, which is easier for them to hurt you the closer you are. And you're opening up your heart, which makes you like open to being hurt even more, because you're in a vulnerable place. But it's so powerful. It's a super powerful tool. And there's several verses in Proverbs 27 that kind of are connected to this as well. There's faithful are the wounds of a friend. These are very famous proverbs. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. And it says, you cannot trust the kisses of your enemy. So even if someone's being lovey-dovey to you, and you know they actually don't have your best interest at heart, they're just manipulating you or whatever, there's that place where a friend can actually wound you. Like, if someone gives me feedback that I've been hurting them, which is actually surprisingly, I know you'd be shocked, happens a lot. I have a very strong personality, and I have often unintentionally, completely obliviously, like, destroyed someone, like, stomped on them, and then they come to me and they say, actually, the way that you said that, I felt crushed, and I cry when they tell me that. I'm like, woo. You don't have to cry if someone's confronting you, but I often do, because it actually does it's scary and it's vulnerable and it does actually wound me when someone gives me feedback, but it's helping to adjust my heart and align my heart in a way that I can love them really well. Even if I was already like, even if my heart was to love them well before, but I didn't realize that my actions were communicating a dishonor for them. And so the wounds of a friend, it's so important that you're able to go to each other and to say, hey, actually, we need to have these conversations because all these little fissures can turn into something really big when they don't have to. That's really easy for little bitternesses and things to start tainting the lenses of the way that you see someone else. And you will stop being able to receive from them in the same way in the things that God has given them that you could benefit from, the strength and stuff that they can lend to you. And also, oftentimes, it just keeps bubbling up. And so you can get filled with all these little offenses between you and someone else, and eventually it causes this explosion that throws mess on everyone, when actually in the beginning, if you just talk to someone instead of waiting for the volcano to erupt, there wouldn't be so much collateral damage. And the other verse in Proverbs 27 is iron sharpens iron. So it's saying, like, I'm a strong, powerful person, and I'm sharp and quick-witted. No, it's not talking about sharp and quick-witted, but it's saying, like, actually, I have strength in me, and you have strength in you. And us rubbing our strengths against each other will cause us to be sharper and more attuned to what's going on. And it's really important for you to communicate the way that people are impacting you, because it shows value for your heart and what's going on inside of you. And those things are valid. There's actually valid needs. Like, it's weird to be needy. Like, I definitely understand the fear of being needy. Like, no one really wants to be seen as the needy, clingy person. But there's actually a place for healthy needs where God wired us a certain way. Like, I need connection to other humans. I'm also an extrovert, so I need more connection than my introverted friends. But I'm wired to need relationships, to need connections with people. And everyone is, even if you're an introvert. And so there's legitimate needs. I need to feel known and seen and loved in my relationships. Otherwise, I feel very unfulfilled in life. We need respect. We need a certain level of respect from the people around us. It crushes the human spirit to not have that. And you can see that in places even like with caste systems or different levels of society, where the people that have no respect, they're just crushed in their spirits. And so there's legitimate needs, and you being able to communicate that, how people are interacting with you, it shows value for yourself and your heart and how God values you. And if the people that you're, I'm not saying like a coworker who hates everyone and doesn't have a relationship with God. It's obviously like a little bit different how you interact with them. I'm not saying you have to go crack your heart open to every person that could legitimately just be tearing around in their woundedness and their brokenness, damaging people around them. I'm saying this is in the context of family and in fighting for relationships that you already have that you're investing value in. And there's still a way that we can, like, even at my work, I haven't even told them a lot of things. Like, most of them don't know that I've, like, spoken at churches or anything like that. But oftentimes, if I'm around, they change their behavior, and I haven't enforced anything. But I'm saying, like, this is the standard of honor and respect that I live out of relationships with. And I'm not confronting them about anything. I haven't said, like, please don't cuss around me. I don't enjoy that. Or I don't talk bad about other people. Like, I've occasionally been like, hey, let's not talk bad about people. That's not super encouraging. So I have called them on some stuff, but most of the time I just love them really fiercely and I love them really well. And I uphold my standard of how I interact with people. And a lot of them have started to like conform to that, even though I've never said anything. So there's still definitely like, this is really, you can bring loving people intentionally and pursuing relationship into the workplace, but I'm not saying you need to go to like your boss who is really wounded and is hurting everyone and like go crack open your heart because you might get stabbed again at close range. But I'm just saying, like, this is in the context of family and in fighting for relationships that are important and that have value to you already, that already have some level of access to your heart, and your temptation is to step back and protect yourself. That's when we're called to move towards each other and have this open heart thing happening. And I just realized it's 12:03. But family's messy, but we work out stuff together. We build bridges, we reach out, and we choose to be brave. So I really want to challenge you in closing. One of the boys is going to do a ministry thing real fast. But I just want to challenge you that even though family is messy, even in our biological families, there is conflict. You can think you're the most patient and glory-filled person until there's other humans around, and all of a sudden the other humans bring something out of you that you didn't even realize was there. So there is mess in family. Anytime that you've ever done life with another human, if any of you have ever lived with another human in the same building as you, you'll realize that there is mess in family, there's mess in relationships, but it's so important to really work on these tools of receiving how Jesus pursues you, and to really work on pursuing and loving other people and pulling out the gold in them, and also showing them your heart and just reflecting back. So I just want to really challenge you to be bold and to be courageous in how you love people and to move towards each other, even in the place of pain or fear or insecurity, because God is right there in those moments, and he's also our comforter and our protector, and he can hold your heart as you're showing people what's going on with you. So